Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll learn about the Allina Hospice Foundation's efforts to help our veterans and housing help and volunteer opportunities for veterans from Habitat for Humanity. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Since its birth on June 14, 1775, over a year before the Declaration of Independence, the United States Army has played a vital role in the growth and development of our nation. Since then, the Army has been at the forefront of defending our country's freedom. It all started in the spring of 1775, as colonial troops were about to confront British troops near Boston, Massachusetts. Recognizing the need to enlist the support of all of the American seaboard colonies, the Massachusetts Provincial Congress appealed to the Second Continental Congress, that time held in Philadelphia, to assume the authority of the New England Army. Congress voted to adopt the Boston troops and resolved to form a committee to bring in a draft of rules and regulations for the government of the Army. When George Washington received his appointment as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army and took command on July 3rd, 1775, there's no way he could have imagined what the Army would become. Soldiers have fought our wars, the American Revolution, the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World Wars I and II, the Korean War, Vietnam War, the Gulf War, and now the Iraq and Afghanistan Wars. And today, soldiers stand ready around the world. The Army's birthday is a recognition of our history, traditions, and service to our nation. It's also the day for us to imagine what it will grow to into the future. Happy birthday.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now to talk about honoring veterans at the end of life are Ron Bagnell, a foundation director from Allina Hospice Foundation, and Maria Adama, manager of counseling and volunteer services from Allina Health Hospice and Palliative Care. Ron, Maria, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ron, I guess we'll start with you. We were talking about the Allina Hospice Foundation. I would guess that there's a lot of listeners out there today that might not quite understand hospice and hospice care. Can you help us with a little definition there? What's that all about?
Well, I hope so. Hospice is a type of care and philosophy of care that focuses on patients with a terminal illness, one that usually results in death within a six-month period of time. And while historians might go back to the 11th century to the origination of hospice, it's really not until the 1950s when a registered nurse in Britain by the name of Cicely Saunders started a hospice program. And then it took off in the United States in the 1970s. Last year, hospice served about 1.5 million patients and their families.
And so this is end-of-life care and how you keep people comfortable and keep their survivors and family comfortable and help them go through that end-of-life experience.
Exactly. We're working with families in terms of meeting their needs from a physical, emotional, social, and spiritual perspective, and making them as comfortable as possible.
Now, Ron, you and I have talked. I had a cousin that died last year, and she was in hospice care. And to me, the whole experience seemed like something foreign. It seemed like we were doing something that was really odd because the family gathered there whenever we could, and my cousin was there. And towards the end, she wasn't talking with us, but I think she heard us. But it was more like we were telling stories and we were having fun and we were doing things that seemed different than the thoughts that you get when you think about losing someone you care for.
Well, in fact, a lot of people try to avoid the word hospice because it's associated with that D word, death. And yet, you know, it's also associated with the R letter, like remember and reflection. and the C word, care and compassion. And one of the things that I oftentimes hear from families is, I wish we would have known about hospice sooner.
You know, it was a time where we could share stories of fun times we had in our life. And one person would tell a story, and then somebody else would tell a story. And in the meantime, you'd go pat her hand or touch her face and say, hi, honey. And hopefully she was hearing about all those good things, too. But there's something that just seems abnormal based on our teachings or the way we're grown up.
Well, it's part of our culture in a way. Even some of our physicians don't think of hospice until the last minute sometimes. And we're trying to reverse that. We want to transform the way hospice is seen in this country so that we talk about it with our physicians and we talk about it with our families so they know what kind of care we want and don't want at the end of life.
Maria, you've seen this a lot, and you've seen a lot of families go through the experience with hospice care. And it seems like there's two parts of it. There's one part you take care of the patient, the person who's going through the end of life, but the other part is the family and taking care of the family as well. How does that all work at the Allina Hospice?
Well, we serve patients and families wherever they're at. So that might be in their private home. It might be in a nursing home, an assisted living, or it might be in a residential hospice. And so what that looks like is we provide support, services, resources to the patient and family so that the patient can be as comfortable and have the best quality of life possible throughout their dying process. So a nurse, a home health aide, social worker, chaplain, volunteers, integrative therapies, including music and massage. We have all these services that can come out, meet with the patient and family, and address their needs, whether it's comfort or it's emotional needs or it's family support. So they're short visits. We come in and out. We rely on the patient and family to provide the overall care, but we give them the support they need so that they can do that.
So, Maria, is there a decision to be made? Is there at some point you decide, I don't want any more remarkable things to try to save me. This is it. Let's just get comfortable. Do they actively make a decision to go hospice as opposed to going back to the hospital?
Yeah, often they do. What's interesting, though, is that I'd say about 40% of our patients die pretty quickly once they enter hospice. And again, we'd like to see that changed. Patients do reach a point where they don't want to keep going to the hospital and they don't want all the aggressive measures. Patients who appreciate hospice really just want to live their life to the fullness they can, even through the dying process.
And spend as much good time as possible with their family
yes,
and friends.
Yes, absolutely.
We're speaking with Ron Bagnell and Maria Atima about honoring veterans at the end of life. Ron, I know that as part of the Allina Hospice Foundation that you've been doing some things to try to take care of veterans. Can you tell us how that all got started and what type of things you're doing?
Well, Tom Brokaw wrote in his book, The Greatest Generation, it is, I believe, the greatest generation any society has ever produced. And Brokaw is referring to the generation that grew up in the Great Depression and went on to serve our country. Many of these veterans are now at the end of life, and as Maria was sharing, most veterans are cared for at home, but some need round-the-clock care of a residential hospice. And with the completion of the new J.A. Weedham Residential Hospice, we have a beautiful home where veterans can receive the very best of care. Unfortunately, some veterans will not be able to afford the room and board expenses that are not covered by Medicare and private insurance. And so this year, we've set it as a goal of ours to help our veterans so that Weedham is accessible to them. And we want to help 90 veterans and raise $250,000 so that they'll receive the same kind of care and dignity that they deserve.
Ron, let's hold that thought. We have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about your effort to raise those funds to help our veterans. We're speaking with Ron Bagnell and Maria Atima about honoring veterans at the end of life. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been joined today by Ron Bagnell, Foundation Director from Alina Hospice Foundation, and Maria Adama, Manager of Counseling and Volunteer Services at Alina Health Hospice and Palliative Care. Maria, that's quite a title, and it's a good long one. I hope you get paid by the pound for that title.
Yeah, me too.
Ron, we've been talking about honoring veterans at the end of life, and before we went to the break, you told us that you're in the process of raising some funds so that you can help veterans who otherwise don't have access to VA facilities, or maybe they're full, and be able to help pay for end-of-life care. Can you get into that a little deeper, please?
Yes. As I mentioned earlier, the room and board expenses at a residential hospice are not covered by Medicare and private insurance. And we know that some veterans will not be able to afford the $400 per day costs at Weedham unless they receive some help. So in appreciation for their service, my board and I have a real heart for veterans and want to help them. And we kicked off this initiative to raise funds at our gala 2 weeks ago, as you well know, because you served as our master of ceremonies. And thanks to our sponsors, guests, and donors, we were able to raise enough funds to begin this effort. We raised a little over $110,000 to help 39 veterans who might not be able to afford that care.
And Ron, not only did I have the honor of emceeing that, it was a great event, but you and I took a tour of the J. Weedham Residential Hospice. What a beautiful facility. It's got all the hospital care devices that you need, but it looks like a big living room.
Well, it does. It surprises many people. It's nothing like a nursing home. It's more like a large home that someone would have, as there are many areas, a kitchen area, private dining rooms, family rooms, even a children's room where families can gather, as well as large patient rooms where they can even stay overnight if they wanted with the patient. But they can gather and celebrate birthdays. I think we've even had one wedding at our reflection room. So it is nothing like you would might imagine. It is beautiful, and it is so peaceful as well.
And Maria, at the Weedham residential hospice, it really is set up for the family as well. They can come there, they can get some milk, they can eat some cookies, they can camp overnight. I think, Ron, you told me a story about one World War II person or fellow that was in there, and they had sleeping bags on the floor.
It was like a slumber party.
Slumber party. And they were there at the end, and they were happy to have been there. And it's a comfortable place, Maria.
Yes.
It's quite the facility.
It's really meant to be there for families. It's most of the individuals who come to live at Weedham, their families aren't able to care for them for whatever reason. And so for them to be able to come and visit and spend time and just be the daughter, the son, the loved ones is so important. And making that comfortable is highly important.
So, Ron, I want to get back to this hospice. The hospice care that you provide in Alina could be provided at the Weedham Residential Hospice or in the nursing home or at home. It's wherever families need help?
That's right. We serve, what is it, Maria, about 550 patients on a daily basis. So today we're out in many of the homes, nursing homes, and we have many of those patients at Weedham. But most of the care is provided in a home-like setting, like their own homes.
Maria, we also want to talk a little bit about, there's a program called We Honor Veterans, and I understand that Alina Health Hospice was recognized for achieving the highest level of recognition in the We Honor Veterans program. Can you explain that to me? I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, I'd love to. The We Honor Veterans program is actually a collaboration between the Veterans Administration and the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization. And it was actually a collaborative relationship that was built to be sure that our veterans are cared for with dignity through their last days. And what the VA has found is that often veterans are dying without VA services and without hospice. And so the idea is that we want them to have a dignified death. And so through this partnership, the VA worked with the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization to give better education to our hospice programs, employees, volunteers, so that they can provide the best care possible to our veterans.
So, Ron, that sounds like quite a program. You're making a big deal out of this. You told me, I think, one out of four dying Americans is a veteran, and Alina wants to take care of our veterans.
We're really committed to that. And this accomplishment with regards to the recognition that has been given to us, I think is an indication of that commitment and dedication we have to veterans. And in fact, we're the only Minnesota hospice program in the state to have received this recognition.
And I saw how serious you were at the event that I emceed, and you had over 300 people there, and they were serious about it because they gave you some serious money, didn't they?
They certainly did, and we can't thank them enough. We still have a long ways to go, and we need to get the word out that this facility, this home, is available to veterans, and we do want to serve them and their families.
Now, Maria, I think you told me you've got several hundred volunteers that help with your hospice programs, whether it's in nursing homes at home or at the Weedham Residential Hospice.
Correct. We have about 400 volunteers, but only about 15 of those are actually veterans. And what we've found through this work with veterans and trying to serve them better is that often a veteran, as they are in their end of life, are interested in meeting with another veteran and being supported by another veteran. We have many stories we can tell about veterans who have wanted to share information, to share about their military experience or what they went through. And sometimes they just feel a little bit more comfortable doing that with a veteran. And so we really we want to provide that support to our patients and families, and as well as teach our staff how to best care for veterans.
So the same bond that we see in day-to-day life and in business, if we meet someone, a fellow veteran meets a veteran, you've got something in common, you talk about that a little bit, then you get to work. But
yes,
at the end of life, if you want to talk about your experience in war or something that happened, they might be more comfortable talking with a fellow veteran and just discussing those issues and maybe talking about the fact that they, in war, took some lives or they did something and get that off their mind before they go to meet their maker.
Exactly. In fact, we survey our families of patients that we've served and who have died, and about 80% of the families we've surveyed have said that their loved one, the veteran who has died, re-experienced combat stress during their end-of-life days. And so it is on their minds, and it is present to them, and we want to be there to support them.
So you'd like to find some more volunteers that happen to be veterans?
Yes, we would.
And how do they contact you? How do you contact them? How do we go about this?
The best way they can do that is to go to our website at alinahealth.org and click the tab on volunteering for Alina Hospice. There's also a phone number they could call, which is 612-262-7108. It's just a great way for veterans to serve veterans. And there are a lot of veterans out there who need that support.
And we'll have a link up to that, those phone numbers and the site on the Minnesota Military Radio Facebook page. Maria, we just got a few seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I guess I just want to say that our veterans, you know, you might ask, why would the veterans need this kind of care? Why would they need Weedham residents or this fund? But what we're finding is that there are many veterans who are in financial need and who are not hooked up to the Veterans Administration at all. And so we're very proud to say we have hooked up a lot of veterans to the VA, gotten them additional services, and really improved their quality of life.
Thanks, Maria. Ron, 30 seconds, final thoughts for our listeners.
I'm reminded of something that Jeff Miller said. The willingness of America veterans to sacrifice for our country has earned them our lasting gratitude.
Ron, you're doing a great job, and keep raising that money to take care of those veterans if they need it for end-of-life care.
Thank you, Tom.
Ron and Maria, thanks for joining us today. That was Ron Bagnell and Maria Adama on Minnesota Military Radio talking about honoring veterans at the end of life. In a moment, we'll be back to learn about housing help and volunteer opportunities for veterans from Habitat for Humanity. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to visit with Habitat for Humanity. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
Today, I want to spend a few moments recognizing fathers across Minnesota. These dads might be veterans, they might be currently serving, returning home from a deployment, or they might have suffered the loss of their son or daughter in service to this country. Whatever your situation, I want to thank you for the role you have played in the lives of our children and families across Minnesota. Actions speak volumes about love and commitment, and simply being there sets the example and grounds our children. This Father's Day, I encourage dads to spend time instilling the importance of service and volunteering to the community, to those in need, and to this country. This is the time to demonstrate to our children the power of serving others. Not only does it help our children grow and develop into generous and caring adults, it also gives back. On behalf of everyone here at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the veterans across this great state, best wishes for a wonderful and meaningful day of celebration.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity is Alex Schuler. Alex, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity, what's your position over there?
I am their Veteran Outreach Coordinator.
Veteran Outreach Coordinator, and you were in the service.
I was. I am a United States Marine.
Uh-oh, Marines in the studio. We're in trouble again. How many years were you in the Marines?
I did 4 years active duty.
And I understand you were deployed a couple of times.
I was. I did 2 deployments to Iraq.
2 to Iraq. What years?
I did 2007 and then also 2008 and part of the beginning of 2009.
Well, it doesn't look like it beat you up too bad. Must have been okay tours, huh?
Fed me well.
Fed you well. Alex, tell me, how did you get from the Marine Corps to Habitat for Humanity?
That's a good question. After I got out of the Marine Corps, I used my GI Bill and went to school at the University of Minnesota and got my degree in political science and a minor in history. And then the job came up because I really I want to help veterans. And when the job came up, I jumped right on it and got the job, and I'm helping veterans now.
Had you volunteered with them before that?
I actually hadn't. That was one of the interview questions that I thought was going to knock me out of the process.
How'd you get to be so lucky to get to go from the Marine Corps to college, and all of a sudden now you're working with Habitat for Humanity? It's got to be really great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really great.
Tell us about Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. What do they do?
We build homes for low-income families within the Twin Cities 7-county metro area. And within doing that, my specific position, we want to do that for veterans. And last year we built 4 homes for veterans and sold those homes to them. And it's just really great. It's really great what we're doing for these families.
Seems like we've heard about Habitat for Humanity for a long time. How long has the Twin Cities Habitat been around?
I believe 25 years.
25 years. And how many homes per year for total?
Currently, we're doing 50 to 60, so we like to say 55, but it's between 50 and 60 is what we're currently doing.
How do you find the homes that you work on? Do you build new homes? Do you rehab homes?
So we do both. We build new properties as well as do rehabilitated homes that we get through foreclosures. We also build duplexes, fourplexes, townhome styles, and then single-family homes.
Now, do you have corporate sponsors and partners that help you find land to build on and homes to rehab?
We do, but that's not my area of specialty where I'd be great at doing that, at letting you know who that was.
Well, there's other people in the Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity that locate the properties.
We have land acquisition specialists.
And your specific area is to help veterans in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, my specific position is to do outreach to veterans for volunteerism and as well as using our programs to help them out.
So let's talk about the outreach. What do you do to find veterans that are eligible and interested in the assistance of Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity?
Well, one of the best things that I find is just talking to people, other veterans that I'm friends with and veterans that I meet at the VFWs, the Legions, just to get the word out specifically, and doing stuff like this, like coming on the radio. And then I also talk with county veteran service officers, and we are part of the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network as well. We're the first nonprofit in the state to be recognized by Beyond the Yellow Ribbon.
And we've talked about beyondtheyellowribbon.org 1,000 times in the show.
That is correct.
So you outreach and you try to find veterans that are eligible. Who's eligible?
So the eligibility requirements for our program, for our home ownership program, let's say, because we have multiple programs, is you have to live in the cities for at least 1 year. You have to meet our income guidelines, and that's generally from 40 to 60% of the area median income for home ownership. And then our credit standards, which we don't require perfect credit. It's based off of debt to income ratio. And then you must understand the responsibilities of owning a home. And then you have to participate in all of our Habitat homeowner trainings, as well as contribute 300 to 500 sweat equity hours, which is volunteering through Habitat, as well as helping build the home that you would live in and other homes within there. And then obviously, you know, agree to pay your mortgage that would come through that. It is a 0% interest mortgage that is through our program. And then for veterans, we waive the first-time home buyer
requirement.
Right now we're kind of working with that right now. So
we're speaking with Alex Schuler from Habitat for Humanity on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Alex, we were talking about the program for new homes. Is there some differences in rehabs, or do you have some corporate sponsors that someone else in your organization finds where you get some homes that are fixer uppers?
Well, the fixer uppers still would be sold the same way through these requirements. The other program that I'm speaking of is A Brush with Kindness, and what we do through that is if you already currently own a home and you are within the income ranges, which is basically 50% area median income and below, you are qualified and have lived in the Twin Cities area for at least a year, you're qualified to have us come look at your home and see what kind of repairs are needed. We do painting projects, floors, windows. We also do critical home repair for other issues like plumbing and electrical, but we have to contract that out to licensed professionals because we can't have volunteers doing work that isn't certified.
Sure. Alex, do you have a website? Is there some information up on that website about who's eligible and how you apply?
We do.
And your website is tchabitat.org, and we'll have a link to that from our Minnesota Military Radio Facebook page so our listeners can get to it. Alex, we have to go to a break, but when we come back, I know you've brought a guest with you today, and it's a Marine that took advantage of the program, and you helped him to get into a home. So we're looking forward to talking to you about that. We're speaking with Alex Schuler from Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Tom Lyons, founder and principal partner of Phelan Partners Limited, a Twin Cities mergers and acquisitions advisory firm where we help business owners to plan, prepare, and execute a strategy to complete the deal. When I'm not hosting Minnesota Military Radio on this station, I'm hard at work helping business owners with their exit strategies. If you're interested in selling a business, please give us a call at 763-231-4200 at Phelan Partners Limited. We've been bringing buyers and sellers together since 1985 and would welcome an opportunity to help you. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been speaking with Alex Schuler from the Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. Alex, I see that you brought a fellow Marine with you. Can you tell me who you've got?
That's correct. I brought along one of our veteran homeowners, Muhammad Zafar.
Muhammad, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
glad to have you today. Mohammed, you were also in the Marines.
Correct. Yes, I was.
Can you tell us, I know you came from Pakistan.
Yep, that's
and when, correct. When did your family come to the United States?
We moved to the U.S. in 1988. I was 13, and then life went on. We moved to Eagan, Minnesota, and we lived there. My brother went in the Marine Corps before I did, and I saw him graduate, and I was like, this is it. The deal is sealed. I'm going to be a Marine, a year before I graduated high school.
So what prompted you to want to be a Marine besides the fact that your brother went in first?
Well, the first Gulf War happened, and I started learning more about the Marine Corps. And one thing that still stuck in my head is that they were known as the 911 force to go help out anywhere in the world, and I wanted to be part of that.
And how was it when you got to boot camp in the Marine Corps?
Besides the first night when I woke up a couple minutes before they threw all the garbage cans around us, I was wondering, what did I do? And after that, it was just uphill.
You know, they even do that in the Air Force to wake us up the first night. So the drill instructors must have talked to each other. So, Mohammed, you served in the Marine Corps for 4 years and the inactive reserves for another 4 years. When you came back from the Marine Corps, where did your life lead you then?
I got out of the Marine Corps. My father actually got sick, so I decided to leave after my four-year contract was over. I went in the Mall of America, worked for the security department, and shortly after that, I got married and life moved forward, and I decided to go to college. I was actually told to go to college by my wife, and I argued for about a minute, and
yes.
I lost.
Yes, dear. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I understand.
And then I started my school first 4 years, and after my four-year degree, I figured I'll go for a master's in community psychology, which I finished in 2011. Now I work as a community psychologist, and I also work for the state of Minnesota.
And Mohammed, somewhere in that whole vast number of years, you became an American citizen.
That's correct. A year after I got out of the Marine Corps, I decided to take the test and get my citizenship. I wanted to do it while I was in the Marine Corps, but you're young, you're out there traveling the world. I wasn't really in my thought. I was a Marine first, so what else is there left?
Well, 4 years in the United States Marine Corps, you certainly deserve to be a citizen of this country, and thank you for your service.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Mohammed, I think I know the answer to this question, but I'll bet your wife had something to do with you trying to find a house.
That's correct. She knew about the Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. She knew how the veterans were also was part of their focus. And after I got a full-time job, she informed me this is a great program. We looked into it, and the whole program was amazing. Going through it, the 400 hours that we had to put in as sweat equity, the hours we had to put in our classes, we learned a lot. They really made you feel like you don't feel like you're being given something, because you're not. And they emphasize that you put in your sweat equity, you work with great people, you work with the vets, and then you end up getting a house, something that we didn't think we would do for another 10 more years because of the affordability of the houses. And we really didn't know what path to go to. Habitat changed that for us and for our kids.
So your wife did the study, found out how to apply, found out that you were eligible after you had a full-time job.
Correct.
And then you contacted the Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity and started learning what you had to do, including the volunteer hours and the classes you went to. Were those on how to be a homeowner, how to deal with houses?
Yes, they cover everything, and it's very simple. First step is just to walk in there, make an appointment. You join the general group, and once that's done, they do your credit check. Very simple. You move forward. Next thing you know, you have classes, which counts towards your 400 hours. And then you take those classes, about 60 hours or so. You learn everything, you name it, how to be a good neighbor, how to do a good lawn, master gardening, how to repair, what's part of the house is part of the city's issue, what is your issue. They make you a better homeowner than anyone that I can think of.
Sounds like some classes we should send some other people to, Mohammed.
Definitely. I think it's a learning experience.
So how long did it take you to find a house and to know that you were going to get into one?
We were very fortunate. It was 2012 is when we, in the fall, we applied. And once we applied in fall, within a month or two, we were already moving forward with all our paperwork and everything. Then we had a home visit, which is normal. They do that. They look into everything about you as a person, who you are, what your needs are, look at your current living space at the time. And December 25th, is when we got a call that we were qualified, because they sent us a list prior to that. They send you a home list of houses that you can choose from. We chose one house. We really liked it. It was in Oakdale. And we were like, this is it. This is our house. If we get it, great. And then their services look at everything, and we were eligible. And we went from there. We put in our sweat equity hours the next year, in 2013. And in May, we were homeowners.
We're speaking with Mohammed Zafer, a Marine, who is now a veteran homeowner, courtesy of the help from the Twin Cities Habitat. And you can find information on them at tchabitat.org or on our Minnesota Military Radio Facebook page. Mohammed, now, how does this, when you got a list of homes and you went, I assume you drove around and looked at some of those.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You have to do that.
And then your wife picked one out, I'm sure, right?
She picked the right one out.
She must be quite a lady. And then you asked to have that house, and you're lucky enough to get it.
Yeah.
Now, when you had a closing, I know there's some special terms for the veterans that are beneficiaries of this program. Can you just tell us in general how that worked?
Basically, what happened is the house that you purchase, there is no interest on it, which already drops a price for you for monthly payments. There's also certain programs within that they make sure that all the Habitat folks can go ahead and do everything that you, the insurance and everything is covered. But maybe Alex could talk more about that.
Alex, sounds like a great program and a very deserving Marine. Got into a home, and he's earned it. 4 years in the Marine, and he's gone to school, and he's gone to school on how to be a good neighbor and take care of his house. And wow, that's quite a program you've got there. When did you first meet Alex? Were you involved in his house?
I first met Mohammed.
Excuse me.
Actually, Mohammed. After I had started working there, he closed on his house in May of last year, correct?
Yes, correct.
And I started working there in October of last year.
Okay.
So we got connected through his story. He's got a pretty powerful story with his family situation and all that. So it was really cool. And I met with him, and then, you know, decided that he was a great story to come and tell the world about how he got there.
Well, Mohammed, I'm sorry, I'm getting you two bearded Marines mixed up in here. Whenever we get Marines in the studio, I get confused. I don't know why that happens. Mohammed, quite a story. Welcome to the United States. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Are you happy to be here?
I'm happy to be here every day.
Every day. Well, I want to thank you for coming to see us on Minnesota Military Radio, and good luck with the new house.
Thank you.
And Alex, final thoughts for our listeners about Twin Cities Habitat?
Yeah, I got a couple final thoughts. If you're, you know, thinking you can't be a homeowner because you can't afford it, you know, we're a great option for you. If you own a home and you're having trouble with repairs because you can't afford them, give me a call. You know, come to our website, check out our program, see if you can apply and qualify, because we're more than willing to help. And if I can't help you or our organization can't help you, I'm going to steer you in the direction of somewhere that you can get help from. So yeah, just check our website out. Give me a call. My number's on our website. And we'll go on from there.
Thanks, Alex. And for our listeners, once again, it's tchabitat.org, or go to Minnesota Military Radio Facebook page, and you'll find the link to that site. And if you're a veteran out there in the Twin Cities and you need a home, find out if you qualify. Get a hold of Alex. He'll help you in any way he can. And, gentlemen, thanks for visiting with us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Alex Schuler from Habitat for Humanity and Mohammed Zafer, one of our Marines who was a beneficiary of that program. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard are Tim Lienhart and Joe Egan. Gentlemen, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Tim, what's going on with our Minnesota Patriot Guard riders these days?
We have plenty of missions going on. People that want our services to be wherever we can be, whenever we can be there. Some of the things that we'd like to talk about today are some of the stuff that happens at a mission. And Joe here's got a, because Joe runs so many missions that he can kind of describe what goes on. And we always want to make sure we have honor, dignity, and respect at the funerals of these veterans that have served us, made our lives safe, and given us the freedoms that we have. So,
Joe, are we looking for a few more riders with a good heart and a flag and a pole?
And a willingness to step up. Not necessarily up beyond the flag line, because that's the most honored part. But, yeah, we need some more leadership, right, captains?
So how does that happen?
Well, there's a number of things. We have a formal checklist. It's over 20 things that a ride captain would do even before the mission starts. primarily the day before. You do a reconnaissance of the area where we're going to be parking, talk to the law enforcement in the area, the funeral directors, the cemetery people, just so they know that when we're there, that's why we're there. You start out the briefing with all the members about a half hour before we form the flag line. We acknowledge new members and all veterans. And then there's a list of things we don't do. We don't talk on cell phones. We don't smoke. We don't even talk. We don't even talk to the media. A regular member, if they're approached by media, are told to not say anything, and the media is presented to the most senior person there. We also talk about how to hold your flag. And you hold your flag straight up. And as long as it's comfortable for you, it's in your right hand. You do not dip the flag. That's reserved for the president only. Also, in the presence of the casket, when it arrives, from the time that the door opens and they bring it across the sidewalk into the church door, that's what we call present arms. If you're military, you salute. If you're not military, you put your hand over your heart. Or beyond that, actually holding a flag is a sign of attention. And we are the first ones there, and we're the last ones to leave. And we stay as long as it is. And if it's 85 degrees, that's it. If it's 30 below, that's it. And if it's raining, that's it. So that's the job of the ride captain. And again, it's to support those in the flag line so the people in the flag line can support the mourners.
So if you're a ride captain, you brief the riders, make sure they're up to date on protocol, what's expected, what's the order, and you coordinate with everyone else that's involved in the mission. And sometimes if you're a ride captain, you talk to the families if they want to ask you about what's going to happen and what you're going to do.
Correct. There's a lot of it. For a lot of people, it's a new experience. And they ask questions, and we give them the answers. And what it is, it's a feeling of comfort, support, and we've got their back outside while they're inside doing what's important for them.
So the Minnesota Patriot Guard right now is looking for more riders, always, but you're also looking for some people to step up and take that very important position of ride captain to coordinate each of the missions.
Correct, and Tim can talk more on that.
Yeah, a lot of our ride captains do a lot of communications between the families and the Patriot Guard, and we end up doing a lot of other things, opening doors and walking people through the ice and whatever it takes to make the family feel comfortable and very safe.
And we're just about out of time. Who's eligible to be a Minnesota Patriot Guard rider?
Anyone. If you just need a 3x5 flag and a good heart.
And all I have to do is go to the website to sign up.
Sign up.
And then if you're available on the day of a mission, show up, pay attention to the ride captain, and perform a very, very important duty.
Yep. Honor, dignity, and respect.
All right, gentlemen. Thanks for joining us today. It's Tim Leonhardt and Joe Egan from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. Before we go, we'd like to mention an upcoming event. Fishing for Heroes has their annual walleye and bass fishing tournament coming up June 21st and 22nd. It will be at Craigens Resort on Gull Lake with more than $7,500 in prizes. Proceeds will go to the Daniel Drevnik Memorial Fund, providing scholarships for veterans headed back to school. For more details, visit us on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Ron Bagnell, Maria Adama, Alex Schuler, Tim Leonhardt, Joe Egan, Commissioner Larry Shelado of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the VA's new community-based outpatient clinics coming soon to a town near you. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.